This is Carl Johnson with an essay from the back page. In 1862, J.W. McGarvey was scheduled to preach at the Broadway Church in Lexington, Kentucky, and Moses E. Lard was scheduled to preach at the Main Street congregation at the same time. There were some college students that were eating breakfast together, and they were trying to decide where they would attend church services that day. And one of them made the observation, "If I knew that Brother Lard was going to be on his high horse, I would go to Main Street." But there's doubt about that. And for that reason, I think I'm going to go to Broadway because Little Mac never disappoints us. Lard stood 6'4" tall, and he was an imposing presence in the pulpit. When Lard was at his best, his preaching had a power and eloquence few preachers have ever matched. But like men of moods, he was not always at his best. On the other hand, McGarvey was only 5'7" tall, and he was of slight build. Compared physically to Lard, McGarvey was indeed Little Mac, as they called him. Little Mac, however, was an intellectual giant. He was not as dynamic a speaker as Lard, but his sermons were consistently excellent. The strongest feature of McGarvey's preaching and writing was his clearness of expression. He used simple language, and he expressed himself with an economy of words. In fact, his sentences were so concise that they read like a condensed telegram. He was easy to hear and hard to forget. Born in Hopkinsville, Kentucky in 1829, McGarvey entered Bethany College in 1847, and he completed a 4-year curriculum in only 3 years. He graduated with honors, giving the valedictory speech in Greek. After graduation, he joined his family, who had moved to Fayette, Missouri, and he began his preaching career. Later, they moved to Dover, Missouri for 9 years, and eventually he moved to Lexington, Kentucky, where he accepted a position as the chairman of the College of the Bible at Kentucky University, and he remained with the college until his death in 1911 at the age of 83. McGarvey was a profound student of the Bible. His commentary on Acts of the Apostles remains a classic unto this day. He also wrote Lands of the Bible, a commentary on Matthew and Mark, Sermons, Jesus and Jonah, Evidences of Christianity, the authorship of Deuteronomy, the text and the canon of the New Testament, and biblical criticism. He wrote regularly for religious journals, and he was one of the editors of the Apostolic Times for 7 years. The London Times made the observation on one occasion that, in all probability, John W. McGarvey is the ripest Bible scholar on earth. When individual communion cups and instrumental music were innovated into the church, McGarvey opposed them vehemently. Unfortunately, later in life, he dropped his opposition to the cups, but he remained adamantly opposed to instrumental music until his death. McGarvey confessed to learning some hard lessons from the mistakes he made as he struggled against unscriptural innovations in the church. In January of 1903, McGarvey was at the Pearl and Bryan Street Church in Dallas, Texas. And while he was sitting on the front seat waiting to speak, he leaned over to Jesse P. Sewell and said, "Brother Sewell, I want to say something to you, if you will accept it in the spirit in which I mean it." Brother Sewell assured him that he would, and Brother McGarvey continued. He said, "You're on the right road, and whatever you do, don't let anybody persuade you that you can successfully combat error by fellowshipping it and going along with it. I know, I've tried. I believed at the start that it was the only way to do it. I have never held membership in a congregation that used instrumental music. I have, however, accepted invitations to preach without distinction between churches that use it and churches that do not. I have gone along with their papers and magazines and things of that sort, and during all of these years I have taught the truth as the New Testament teaches it to every young preacher who has passed through the College of the Bible, and yet I don't know of more than 6 of those men who are preaching the truth today." He concluded that it was a big mistake on his part to try to combat religious error by going along with it. He says emphatically, "It will not work." Well, McGarvey's not the first person to warn us about the above danger. In fact, God's people have been warned from the beginning not to embrace and tolerate outside religions. A failure to heed such warnings resulted in the downfall of Israel in the days before Christ. In what seems to be a historical pattern, the sirens of religious error always appeal to the Christian's sense of tolerance. Commentator R.C.H. Linsky offers this summary of the pattern. He says, in the beginning, error is meek and asks only to be tolerated. It pleads for broad-mindedness. However, once it is entrenched, it becomes inflated and accusingly asks, what are you doing here? This is what happened to little Mac, and if we do not heed his warning, it will happen to us too.